Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Here we go. It is England into the last 16, beating Wales 3-0, and that is where our bipartisanship will slightly end here. Yes, England are into the last 16 after a 3-0 win over Wales. USA joined England into the knockout phase after a slender win over Iran. And also we had the likes of the Netherlands, and we also had Ecuador into the knockout phase as well. Let's get stuck straight into day 10, shall we? Why not? Yeah, we're here. 5 a.m. every day, Sports Social Podcast Network, YouTube as well, with the World Cup daily podcast via What If Football, of course. That's not all we've got. We've got World Cup great games over there on Patreon. We've got football manager challenges. We've got combined 11s predictors on YouTube as well. We've got, of course, alternate football universes also on YouTube. But first, let's crack open one of these for England. Hope that played well. Because England are into the last 16. Mind me trying to put down my Corona. Let's chuck open the bottle opener and let's get straight into England 3, Wales 0, where England, well, simply were wholly dominant, which should come as no surprise given the two teams, but there we are. In terms of the team news, obviously, little asterisk by this. Of course, the second half, I'll be a little bit more sober for that one. So if you're of a Welsh disposition or you just want to hear some more analyses, then go over to the second half of the today. There'll be a time code somewhere if you're on YouTube, I'm sure. Anyway, so England, they brought in a raft of changes, the likes of Phil Foden and Marcus Rashford flanked Harry Kane as opposed to Bukayo Saka and Raheem Sterling. Meanwhile, Jordan Henderson brought a little bit of solidity into the midfield as opposed to Mason Mount, whilst Jude Bellingham was given the Mount role, so to speak. Meanwhile, of course, Kyle Walker was handed some minutes on his return to action ahead of Kieran Trippier, of course. So let's start with Wales. It's only fair that we should start with Wales. And the simple fact was that for the most part, the Dragons, as they apparently are known, Wales, they just could not get out. They could not get out for the entirety of the first half. Yes, Joe Allen flashed a curler past the post, over the bar, miles over the bar. But apart from that, England were in serene comfort for the first half. That was the only real chance that Wales got in that first half. England's high defensive line was partly to do with that. There was not really too much upward mobility in terms of the Welsh squad. Gareth Bale, of course, retained his place. The only changes really to the Welsh team was Joe Allen was in at centre midfield. And Dan James was out on the wing as they changed to a back four, almost to match England. Pound for pound, it did not work, so to speak, really. John Henderson did a lot of shuttling around, moving around, and really the midfield three of England was, well, it was solid, wasn't it? Jude Bellingham would drift out to the flanks, and Phil Foden on the right would drift in, as is his wont, as he's a left winger, and Maguire stepped out to nullify any threat, or any whiff of an attack. He did have one shot, which was kind of ridiculous. Went out for a throw, which is so Maguire, isn't it? But there we are. Wales did come out to have a little bit of a go later on. They switched Brennan Johnson up for Gareth Bale midway through, well, at half-time. So maybe that we are seeing the end of Gareth Bale here in an international setting. It would be sad to see that. That would be the case. I would like to see him all the way up to Euro 2024, if possible, with this Welsh team. But there we are. But Wales didn't truly give it too much of a big go. Kiefer Moore had a shot that was deflected, which John Pickford was quite easily equal to. There was a chance that whistled past the post, and Pickford gladly pulled his arms out to let the ball pass the post, because he'd read it quite well. To be fair, the decision to bring off Gareth Bale, quite a brave one from Rob Page, really, but it was one to give Wales a bit more verticality. With the score still 0-0, Wales had to win, albeit the score from the other game was USA 1, Iran 0. Don't worry, we'll get onto that in a little while. But it didn't work. It, obviously, an admirable approach. You've got to try absolutely everything at a World Cup, and Wales did give it everything. Unfortunately, it just was not enough. They did have to, well, ultimately did have to get 3 points against Iran, and they could have done with getting 3 points against USA, given the fact that USA ended up with 5 points from this group stage. Of course, we'll talk about the USA-Iran game certainly to come later on in the show. But let's go on to England. And Jude Bellingham, as we mentioned, he retained his place. There was a lot of whispers, a lot of rumour that John Henderson would come in. Who for? Who knew? It apparently was Mason Mount, which gave Jude Bellingham a three a role. Yes, it was probably a flatter midfield three than what England are used to, probably more so a 4-2-3-1 that they've deployed in previous games. But Jude Bellingham was free here. He was able to drift out to the right, mainly what he did do. And him and Phil Foden, the wonder kids, the wonder boys, the shining lights going forward for English football, if we're being honest with ourselves, they linked up incredibly well. It was football in Nirvana from an English perspective, or at least as Nirvana-ish as football can get if you're donning the old white of England. Of course, Bellingham being given this freer role allowed him to go to the right. Phil Foden on the right, with his left-footedness, allowed him to drift inside, where he was at his absolute dynamic best. To be fair, there was a lot of clamour for Phil Foden going forward. I was quite surprised to see Gareth Southgate bow to it instantly, because he's one of the type to be fairly stubborn with his addressing of so-called clamour. We've had it with Jack Grealish beforehand. We've had it in numerous names. And to be fair, the English public will not let Southgate sleep, will not let him lie, unless England performed to the standards of Brazil 1970. It feels like it sometimes, but this was as perfect, just as Brazil 1970 was, this was as perfect as an England group stage match, an England World Cup match could possibly be. They very rarely let the opposition through on goal, and when they did, the game was all but over. And really, it was just a nice watch. Very rarely do we get this in a World Cup match. If we're just to take away the Southgate reign, so take away the Panama match, take away the Sweden 2-0, obviously take away what happened in the Euros, Ukraine in the quarterfinals, for example. Has there been so routine a World Cup win for England in a World Cup match? I don't think there has been. Yes, there's been a couple of 2-0s here and there, an odd 1-0, maybe a 3-0 to Denmark, I suppose, to Poland, to Paraguay. But really, this is a derby match, which should have been a bit of needle, it should have been a bit tense here and there. Wales should have given it a go, But England did not let them have that go. And Gareth Southgate, his tactics deserve all of that praise for that not being allowed to happen. And 3-0 against Wales, yes. 3-0 against Wales, 19th in the world, against 6-2 against Iran, 20th in the world. It isn't as black and white as all that, because Wales, 19th in the world, is a huge local rivalry. Wales were going for a win. England only needed a point. It seemed all set from an England perspective to be just set to be a scrappy one-goal win, maybe two-goal win if we're absolutely lucky. But this was, of course, the first half had its niggles here and there. And England, although they had complete dominance over the game, they were unable to find that little touch. Rashford, of course, had that audacious overhead kick. He had a one-on-one, which Wayne Hennessy, to be fair to him, saved expertly. So England, it's not as though they didn't have the chances, but come the second half, they were just that much quicker, that much sharper, that much more intense. Say, for example, of course, Rashford scores the free kick goal to get the ball rolling. But then 2 minutes later, he's there winning the ball in the attacking third and then providing it for Kane, who provides it for Foden as well. Again, Foden showing his dynamism again on the left this time, cutting in and fires the ball home, open net. And by that point, 2-0, it is pretty much game over. Of course, we have Rashford scoring the third goal. And by the end of it, fairly simple. But obviously, with everything like that comes the next step. For now, it is England versus Senegal in the last 16. Do England go with Phil Foden, an inside forward on the right, or do they go with Bukayo Saka, more of a winger on the right? And the problem is with England, when you've got so much talent and you've got such a baying audience from the press, from the fans on social media, it is always that clamour that will lead him to criticism, whichever way he should turn, unless, of course, the World Cup trophy is delivered back to British shores. And that's all I'll say on that, because I think you can run yourselves around in circles, talking about it, discussing it, jumping on whatever platform you want to do. But the fact is, today, it worked. And on the first match day, it worked. The second match day, not so much. But in the end, 7 points from 9 available. Most teams that you'd expect to be front runners are probably going to get that points tally. So does it matter? No, because England, they got top spot in the group. And they are then due to face Senegal with what we would expect a potential quarter-final to be: France, maybe Argentina if they are to drop into that half of the draw. But, of course, we'll get onto that, don't worry. The next game, I'll admit, I went back and re-watched whilst I was sipping a couple of the old Coronas, and it was Iran 0, USA 1. Of course, USA exacting that revenge for 1998 in a match that mattered much more on the pitch than it did off it, especially compared to 98, where it was a dead rubber. Here, it was a winner-take-all affair. And it felt almost like going into the game that Iran, well, they just needed a point. Their defensive nous maybe should see them through. But right from the off, of course, Iran with that low block, they will throw players forward when they get the chance to spring forward and counter-attack. But it didn't really happen. USA exacted a control that was far beyond any Iranian measures. So you got Pulisic cutting in. He was taking up adopting sort of like left half space roles, central roles, which did help him. He headed over just on the 11th minute mark, headed into the goalkeeper's arms rather on the 11th minute mark, and of course he would score via that avenue. But it was a venture that USA used again and again, and it worked. And for Iran, what they had in response was very little. Of course, it was a two-pronged counter-attack with Sadar Azmoun and Mehdi Taremi on the counter-attack. They couldn't really link as well as they could possibly have done. To be fair, with the Wales game, the goals that came from that in the so-called counter-attacking masterclass that deployed against Wales, none of them came from Azmoun and Taremi linking. It came from a second ball from a counter, and then a second ball from a set piece, and then a counter, which really was scored by midfielders. So it wasn't too much of a shock that Azmoun and Taremi, who don't often get played alongside one another. If one is to play, one will play on the wing, one will play centrally, and really it's just shoehorning two of the brighter talents of Iranian football into one position, because both will prefer central attacking positions. But that is not what happens with Iranian football, especially at World Cup level. Didn't happen here, unfortunately. It showed that they weren't really destined to link up with one another. The counter-attacking was incredibly blunt. I was quite disappointed with Iran's performance going forward on the counter. They had one header at the goalie. That was very much it. And USA, they controlled it. They retained possession. They pressed high. They pressed throughout. Kept a very high line. Compacted the Iranians within their own half. But of a very young USA team, you'd expect them to have a little bit defensively lacking, a bit like what we'll see with Ecuador when we move on. But no, USA were very good defensively and thoroughly deserved the 1-0 win of what I've seen of it. Of course, I did try and catch up with proceedings after the victory for England over Wales, but you could imagine that revelry preceded me on that one. But something to look out for, obviously, since Netherlands USA, which is all set to be an absolutely incredible last 16 encounter. They're a lot closer than what you may expect. The USA will, or rather the Netherlands will have to be fully in tune with Pulisic cutting in and adopting these central roles almost as if he's almost as if it's a 4-4-2. To be fair, the Netherlands may face a 4-4-2 just as England faced in the second game. And of course, with that comes Anthony Robinson filling in for him out wide, so too across the other side, Sergiño Dest making up for that lack of width on the right. But Pulisic, dangerous, incredibly dangerous centrally. And of course, Timothy Weah with his disallowed goal showed, his danger as well on the counter, on the transition as well, just about offside, which may or may not play into American hands going into the last 16, because Virgil van Dijk, I've noticed, tends to drop a little bit deeper than Ake, than Timber. And if the Netherlands are caught exactly like that, Timothy Weah will not be easy to catch, I'll tell you that now. So, well, of course, the second half was a different story for USA, for Iran. It showed another problem for USA, the counter, but they dealt with it incredibly well. And, I think the last 16 with the Netherlands, it could go right down to the wire. It could be a lot closer than what you imagine. And speaking of the Netherlands, let us get stuck straight into Group A after this short break. And by the magic of editing, I'll be a lot more sober when we go to Group A. Catch you in a minute. And welcome back. Of course, there was another group to be playing some football over there on Tuesday, and it came from Group A, where we had two more teams qualified for the last 16. First in the Netherlands, as was to be expected, and then Senegal, who ousted Ecuador. Some people, including myself, dark horses to do quite well, and of course Qatar already eliminated. And now the main event from this group was mainly Ecuador versus Senegal, despite ITV's insistence on putting the star power on ITV in terms of the Netherlands, as well as Ali McCoist on commentary. Regardless, let's go to the Khalifa International Stadium, where there was two Ecuadorian changes back into a 4-3-3. Likewise with Senegal, with Papi Gueye was in as well, and they moved from a 4-4-2 into a 4-3-3. And really, for me, the one thing that qualified Senegal above Ecuador was that they were just more tactically diverse than their opponents. It almost felt, setting up in the first 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of the game, that Ecuador were the team in third place pushing for that win. It was them who needed to win, not Senegal. And it was fairly bizarre, really, when, of course, they can't just play for the draw for 90 minutes. That's how you get picked off in this game, I suppose. But there was tons of spaces to attack, force Senegal. There is a way of playing high-intensity football and being defensively resolute, but I feel as though Ecuador could be neither one nor the other. They had to be defensively astute, but couldn't provide anything going forward. And that's really what the... Once we got into the measure of the game, once we got into the rhythm, the first half was Ecuador settling for what they had, it seems, 0-0. They'd started off brightly enough, but then they settled in. But the only problem was with that, they were incredibly blunt up front. There was no outrageous skills or wide play from Gonzalo Plata. There was no real eye for goal for Ene Valencia. Pervis Estupiñán wasn't really getting up front as he tends to do on the left from left back. And Ecuador, as a result, they couldn't really handle themselves defensively either. They were as exposed as they've ever been all World Cup, and they were as blunt going forward as they have been all World Cup. Now, they didn't really try to score a third and a fourth and a fifth against Qatar in the first game, but going forward, the first half of this game here against Senegal reminded me of that, really. And Galíndez didn't have a save to make before today. Of course, the only shot on target against Ecuador was that Cody Gakpo lethal finish, so it wasn't as if they could be front foot and defend against some good opposition. But I think there was, obviously, it was do or die for Senegal. There was a bit more hunger, I believe, than the Netherlands. The Netherlands could take the draw in full knowledge, really, that Qatar were next, and an easier 3 points was to be made. And they did slow things down, Ecuador, probably around half an hour in, but it came too late. They had to be far more intense in the second half after Ismaïla Sarr won the penalty, then scored the penalty after some tidy play down the left by Senegal. And as a result, Senegal dropping deeper, as you would expect them to do. They've got a lead to defend, just as Ecuador did at the start when it was 0-0, in retrospect, with the points. And they did it really, really well. And to be fair, they looked quite comfortable in open play throughout all of the game. They looked comfortable until, obviously, Moises Caicedo heads in from a corner, and the game barely had time to sort of relax into what could have been an interesting state of affairs had it been 1-1 going into the final 20-25 minutes, with Senegal needing to attack and Ecuador having to sit back. I wonder what we might have seen. Would Ecuador have learnt the lessons from the first half? Well, we didn't have time because a free kick came in and Kalidou Koulibaly pounced on the second ball, thrashed it home, and Captain Fantastic, as he is standing in for Sadio Mane, got the goal to send Senegal through to the last 16, emulating the great team of 20 years prior that contained the manager Aliou Cissé as well. And then, of course, once the game came, they knew they had to drop into that 4-5-1 low block. And going the other way, they were a lot more varied in attack as well, and it was very crucial. They weren't as predictable as Ecuador felt, particularly in the last 10 minutes, which, you know, you're just going to have to lump balls into the box. And with Senegal's defence, they were always going to bat those chances away that Ecuador had. Senegal, at first, they looked to counter and did so via the channels, via wide play. That's essentially how the first goal, the penalty, comes about. There was a series of chances in the first 10 minutes. Idrissa Gana game, Boulaye Dia. In the first knockings of the game, could have had Senegal a couple of goals to the good. Ismaïla Sarr, before his penalty, curled one narrowly wide. And in the first half, they dominated. And second half, obviously, as we mentioned, fairly easy for them. Yes, they conceded the goal, but as soon as they conceded, they got straight back on the front foot via a set piece and scored it. They linked quite well in the channels. Idrissa Gana Gueye played a very good hybrid role, I felt. When they needed a goal, he was playing in a 10. And of course, when they needed to retreat like the wingers, they moved from what was pretty much a 4-2-3-1 and into that 4-5-1. Ismaïla Sarr was dangerous all game. Boulaye Dia would peel off to the right, and he was dangerous too. And I don't know the results from Group B yet, but they'll be very dangerous to whoever has won Group B. They'll be resolute defensively, and they've, of course, got the two strikers going forward. Well, to be fair, NDA as well has been quite good. They've got two sides of the pitch, really, and the midfield are all quite dangerous. And really, it's probably the experience here that's shone through. They're a bit more tactically diverse. Ecuador have got a young squad and did very well to trouble as they did this quite difficult group. And going forward, Ecuador can be proud despite elimination. Senegal, of course, this is all bonus now. They will, depending on opponent, you'll know more than me at this current time at around 5:15 on Tuesday evening, whether or not they are favourites to go into the quarterfinals, which would be a complete emulation. Then who knows where? We know that Senegal are probably Africa's strongest team. They've probably got the best chance. Morocco, I would say, have got a decent enough chance, depending on who they draw in Group E, of course. But a fantastic display by Senegal, and lovely to have some African teams back in the knockout phase. They were robbed in 2018, if you ask me, with the disciplinary tiebreakers. And that's the first time in a 32-team World Cup that we hadn't had any African representation. And so, first group back in the subsequent tournament, straight away, Senegal are leading Africa into the last 16. And I don't think it will be the last. Certainly with Morocco, they look almost inevitably in. And I wouldn't count out Ghana just yet, although Tunisia and Cameroon may be the end of the road for them, given Tunisia's opposition and given Cameroon's opposition as well, and as well as Switzerland and Serbia playing one another could usurp them for second place, certainly. And in Group A's other match, Netherlands took apart Qatar with strolling ease. It was finally a start for Memphis Depay. He was in for Steven Bergwijn, and Martin de Roon was in for Tim Koopmeiners. Meanwhile, Qatar made just the one change, with Hatem coming into a midfield. And Qatar, really, just as they have been the entire tournament, incredibly negative, too negative for this World Cup. They sat ridiculously deep, looked for the long ball. They did have a couple of half chances, but when they didn't come off, it looked as though any type of confidence for any remotely dangerous attack just evaporated from them. And the Netherlands were able to bypass this low block easy. And if they really, really, really wanted to, they could have thrashed them by 5-6 goals here. They had quite a good few chances in the first half. Davy Klaassen had a chance in the first 5 minutes. And you got the sense, really, from Qatar that they'd be absolutely delighted to not get battered, essentially. And they didn't, but it was all at the Netherlands' mercy, really. They never really opened up. It made for quite a dull game. This was easily an easy choice for the double screening. This was on the laptop. The Senegal game was on the telly. Easy choice to make. And there are quite a lot of easy choices to make in terms of that respect going forward, because of such an array of do-or-die matches: Senegal versus Ghana, Serbia, Switzerland, Belgium, Croatia as well. We've got it all to look forward to in the coming 3 or 4 days, haven't we, really? They were stupidly ponderous as well for the second goal, which allowed Frenkie de Jong in for the rebound. There was a goalkeeper who didn't really do much, although you can't really level it at him. He just made a good save off Memphis Depay. And then two defenders just waited for the ball to drop when they should have just been rushing to it, clear it for throwing, get out. But Frenkie de Jong somehow got there. It was comical almost. The Netherlands didn't really improve a scratchy game with their presence, really. It was about control and get that first goal and then see what happens then. Because it was fairly, they were in control for the entirety of the game, apart from those few half chances I mentioned at the start. And really, I mean, yeah, they exacted that control very quickly. Qatar were defensively desperate, even quicker than that. Memphis was always trying to get into the left half space, as you'd expect. He was the focus of the defence, it seemed, sole focus at times, and it left Cody Gakpo the more dangerous of the two players throughout the tournament, throughout this game even, and he slotted in his third goal of the tournament, joining Enner Valencia and Kylian Mbappe as the Golden Boot leaders. Now, obviously, that won't be the case for Enner Valencia going forward, unless there's some serious spreading of the goals out since his team has been eliminated tonight. There's utterly no use in trying to gauge the Dutch from this game. Perhaps we may see a different Netherlands altogether. Perhaps they are the slow burner. We did mention maybe a week or two ago that in 2014, when Louis van Gaal last coached the Dutch, they were starting off incredibly bright, perhaps too bright, and then they toiled against Australia. They did enough on the counter against Chile incredibly fortunate to beat Mexico and Costa Rica, and unfortunately penalties did for them in the following game in the semi-finals. They'll be hoping for a much more crescendo-y World Cup, and it would be a fantastic way to ride off into the sunset for Louis van Gaal, wouldn't it? I personally can't see that coming to fruition. When you look at their half of the draw, you're probably looking at the likes of Netherlands. Well, Netherlands, they are Netherlands. You're looking at Argentina. You are looking at Spain and Brazil. And if England have faltered later on, I'm just off to the pub to watch it. Maybe England as well. Who knows? And I think that may be a bridge too far for the Dutch, although you never know. You never know. But could be a case of 2010, especially more so than the 1970s. Regardless, the Dutch are through. They've done what they needed to. Efficient in a way without really dazzling. Of course, Cody Gakpo being the exception to that, because he has just been absolutely fantastic. And they march on into the last 16 after what has been, well, the last knockout stage game that Netherlands played. Louis van Gaal was in charge, of course. And that was two groups down, six to go. We are going to preview the next two and some very crucial games from groups C and D after this short break. Welcome back. Group C sees Poland meet Argentina in a battle between first and second. Saudi Arabia versus Mexico as well. And the state of playing Group C is Poland top somehow with 4 points, Argentina second with three, Saudi Arabia with three, and Mexico with 1 point. So in black and white terms, Poland versus Argentina is for first. Saudi Arabia versus Mexico is for a chance to potentially qualify. So many permutations, I'm not going to go through the lot of them, but black and white as it is, Argentina with Lionel Messi in the fulcrum role, in the number 10 role, as he has been for the past 15 years, Argentina will be expected to win. You'd expect Poland to be a bit more resolute defensively than Mexico. Argentina have by no way, shape or form been good this tournament. They've had few flashes of brilliance, of course. That's always going to be the case when you've got players like Lionel Messi who opened up the Mexico game. If he wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't give him anywhere near a good chance here. But with a team like Poland, who I've been not impressed with remotely either, mainly for their negative tactics, they'll be incredibly negative again. Having shut out Mexico, which I don't think is too much of a mean feat. Mexico don't look like scoring all tournament. We'll see what they can do against Saudi Arabia. And to be fair, Poland are incredibly lucky against Saudi Arabia, which has been belied by the scoreline. 2-0 there is a It was a bit of an error for the second goal as well, and a missed penalty for Saudi Arabia did warp things, kind of. And Saudi Arabia really should be qualified off the back of the Argentina win. Should have really got a point against Poland, if not a win. And Mexico did make Argentina sweat, so there is... the only thing that the question marks are around Mexico going into the Saudi Arabia game is going forward. The final third, can they find a goal? They've certainly got exciting players, Alexis Vega. You've got Irving Lozano as well. You've got the likes of Raul Jimenez probably coming off the bench as he did in the previous game. A decent enough midfield to be physical with the Saudi Arabians. And you'd expect, well, they need a big win over Saudi Arabia to even think about going through. The 2-0, the goal from Enzo Fernandez is a bit of a sucker punch, really, the second goal for Argentina in that game earlier on in last week, because it makes it just that little bit more difficult. Now, Saudi Arabia can't play for a point because Poland have got a better goal difference than they have. They may hope that Argentina can thrash Poland, but let's be fair, Argentina haven't looked like thrashing anybody this tournament. So I have a feeling that the Saudis can shock, so too can Poland. This group is wide open. It's probably one of the more unpredictable groups. Argentina, they can be good, they can be efficient going forward, but they can also be sloppy and turgid. Same goes with Mexico too, and Saudi Arabia, with that backing that they've got, fantastic to see. Could spring another surprise against Mexico. And if they do, if they win, all Saudi Arabia need to do is win. And if they win, they're through. Because obviously Poland on 4 points, Argentina on 3 points, neither of them. Both of them can't win. So it's wide open, open like a book. Still, there's the chance for the two favourites, Argentina and Mexico, to go through, but it needs a lot to happen there. A big Argentina win, a big Mexico win for that to happen, which, of course, could do as well. Group D is our final group that we will be previewing. It's Australia versus Denmark, which is the big one, and Tunisia versus France. So the state of play here. France are one of the three teams who have progressed to the last 16 with a game to spare. They've got 6 points, and because of their six superior goal difference from Australia, they are essentially top of the group. Meanwhile, Denmark are on one, so two. Tunisia. Australia versus Denmark, one of the clearer shootouts for second place, alongside Serbia and Switzerland, Uruguay and Ghana. Similar makeups in those groups, especially with Tunisia playing France. You'd expect France to make a lot of changes, but still have enough to at least get a draw against the North African side. Barring that goal differential miracle, France will be top. Good chance for them to get minutes into fringe players. Meanwhile, Australia versus Denmark, Australia will have to show what they did in the first 25-30 minutes against France defensively to get through this one. Ultimately, Denmark, a bit like Mexico really, don't look too great going forward. They got their goal from a set piece against France, so maybe that could be an avenue. Likewise, Australia have Harry Suter, who I've been incredibly impressed with, and it would mark 16 years since the last knockout stage game that Australia played in the World Cup. Would be fairly fitting, like we've seen Senegal achieve here today. So again, another one wide open. Obviously the key one is Australia versus Denmark. What can happen there? Denmark will have to find an attacking edge. They've got the best players. Will that mean anything? Now, I don't know the Iran versus USA score yet, but it's along similar lines to that, really. The team who are probably better defensively hold all the cards. So that's how we have it. And probably a bit profligate going forward as well, Australia. But we'll see. We will see. And that is for tomorrow's episode. Thank you very much for listening and watching, if you do so on YouTube as well. And until next time, see thee, the Three Lions. Podcast Network.